On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the film Groundhog Day. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you haven't seen the film, just be aware that the plot of the film will be spoiled for you if you listen to this episode. Enjoy.
Hello, hello.
It's Friday, shopping on Black Friday, pushing people over just to get a TV. I love to shop. Yeah.
Stamping them, yeah.
Push some children over, yeah. It's, yeah, so this is our Black Friday episode.
It is.
Will you, well, it seems we're recording ahead of time, will you be indulging in this year's festivities?
I am going to get my elbow pads on. I'm going to cover my trousers in glue and then roll in broken glass. I'm going to take my cricket bat and the lid to a metal bin, and I'm going to go wreak havoc to get some goodies.
Yep, because you really want a new Bosch toaster.
I mean, that's that's what I'm after. It's like the One Ring, Lord of the Rings, apart from toast.
It's your precious.
I mean, I'd rather have that than a magic ring. Something that gives me toast. Love a bit of toast.
Yeah, the ring is not good. I don't understand why everyone's so obsessed with this stupid ring. Like, it turns everyone into dickheads.
It's like, come on.
Tell you what, they did the right thing in destroying it.
Yeah, they did. Although, you know, it would have been cool to turn invisible and be like, ha-ha, I might have been corrupted by an evil godlike monstrosity, but I can turn invisible when I want.
No, that is pretty cool. It's like the invisibility cloak in Harry Potter. That doesn't come with any side effects. Apart from Voldemort wanting to kill you, but that's a whole other thing.
I mean, he's pretty easy to deal with. Can't kill a baby.
Yeah. He's a little like ghost baby for most of Harry Potter.
And as we've already established, hammer in one hand, wand in the other, job's a good'un.
Wand and hammer.
Wand and hammer. That's my favourite
brand of toothpaste.
It's the name of my pub I'm setting up, the Wand and Hammer.
I'd go there. That sounds like it would serve some craft ale. And it would be in that good beer guide, and it would be frequented by beardy blokes from Camera.
Yeah. And also wizards who are renowned for being beardy blokes.
Yep. Actual wizards. Did you see that tweet where it was comparing like young besuited Jude Law Dumbledore from the recent film to long white bearded sparkly robe Dumbledore from the original first Harry Potter film, saying, "Oh, when did Dumbledore decide that it was okay to finally like be himself or whatever?" And the answer is he got tenure.
I mean, that's what happens, isn't it? Immediately just, I'm going to start wearing robes.
Yeah. I mean, from that point of view, it's probably a very, very good thing that my career in academia didn't really work out. Because if it had, by now I'd be a kind of a tenured professor just walking around in a mankini and they just wouldn't be able to touch me.
That's exactly what would happen, Paddy. I know you well, and I know
because
your
desire
to wear
mankinis. Yeah, that's the real me.
It is. It's your true self.
Yeah.
Living your best life in the mankini.
Yep. But Black Friday is just weird. It's weird how we've adopted that as the kind of wholesale American import of like tradition, but we haven't adopted the nice thing that goes with it, which is Thanksgiving. So it's like, oh, don't bother seeing your family or taking any time off work. Just run down to the shops and kill people.
Yeah, I think we've got to the true root of modern culture, haven't we?
Yeah.
Get rid of all of the nonsense about loving one another. Get right down to the buying stuff you don't need.
Yeah. Don't be thankful. Thankfulness is for suckers.
Yeah. Only losers are thankful for things.
You know, were we thankful when we won those two world wars and conquered half the world and shit? No, we weren't.
we wanted more.
But that is the British psyche, isn't it?
It's, well, the British psyche is
We're a bunch of ungrateful bastards.
Never to be happy and never to be unhappy. Because if you're unhappy, then you're some kind of scoundrel. If you're happy, it means you've given up on the true middle of the road misery that is being a great British hero.
That's true. Yeah, you can't be truly thankful because it's raining all the time. And yeah, but you can't be unhappy because it's like, look, there are still buses and stuff. You can still just about get on the road when you need to. There's, you know, Tesco's. There's Asda. There's Greggs.
That's the true English motto. There's, you know, Tesco's.
Yeah. On the plus side, we've got Little Chefs.
Although, alas, very few.
Really?
Yeah, Little Chef is going down. Unfortunately, I'm quite sad about that. I love a bit of Little Chef. Like, I don't know if you did. You used to visit that Little Chef on the way down to Exeter?
Once or twice, yeah.
Yeah, that one's gone now.
Oh man, what's it? What have they put in its place?
Nothing at the moment.
Probably some cows.
It is Britain.
Yeah, for American listeners, Little Chef is kind of like the like nice diners that you have when you drive from place to place and you stop off for lunch. Except it was conceived and staffed by your nan.
Yeah, imagine an American diner apart from replace American diner food with British food.
Yeah, I mean like proper stodgy stuff.
Yeah, and I have a special place in my heart for Little Chef because they did do a good like English breakfast. You didn't really want to order anything off the root of the English breakfast. That way is where the true stodge and the true danger lay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You get like a bread sandwich with dumplings and bread.
Served on a bread plate.
Yeah.
Covered in gravy.
Oh yeah. Everything's covered in gravy.
Literally everything.
Did you see that? You're aware of Philadelphia Flyers mascot Gritty, right?
I am, yes.
The hero that we need in 2018.
I kind of love him, but I'm also incredibly confused.
I think that's most people's reaction to him. But no, he's definitely a force for good. And he gave an interview to Time magazine today, I think. I think it was Time magazine. And they said, what does he like to eat for Thanksgiving? And he says, just a giant boat of gravy with a straw. So there you go.
I mean, I'm down for that.
That's what he likes. And did you see this week he also put a child in the penalty box for fighting him?
It's all that child deserves.
Yeah, because they have like these cutesy segments in between periods in the ice hockey game where little kids get to go and skate on the ice amongst their heroes and stuff, and it's really cute and adorable. And one of them skates up to Gritty and just starts punching him. So Gritty picks him up, puts him in the timeout box. He's a genius.
Yeah, I mean, who does that?
Yeah, that kid has some terrible parents.
He should... That child is going to grow up to be a wrong'un.
Yeah, definitely. Any time he sees a mascot, he's going to have to punch him.
Yeah, just whacking him one.
Yeah. Either that or he'll try to become a mascot himself and he'll fail at it and then it'll give him a complex.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. But anyway, you actually went to the cinema this week.
I did. I did go to the cinema.
Which is unlike you.
I do like the cinema, but I'm very picky about what I watch.
Yeah, and I think, as we know, you're limited by local choice, as am I, actually, to be fair. But
well, I mean, I could go and watch any old nonsense, but I like choosing things that are on at the nice cinema near me, which is more art house.
Yeah.
But they
haven't got time for nonsense.
But they were showing Bohemian Rhapsody, which I've heard mixed things about. Some people have said it's good fun. Other people have said it's the worst thing ever, and that it's, you know, it's a nonsense biopic.
Yeah.
But I feel as though it was good fun, and I enjoyed it, and it was nice. And they did a very good job of recreating the energy of live performances.
Which I think with Queen, with a film like that, is probably the most important thing to do, right? Is to capture that energy. It's more about capturing a magical moment in time than it is about anything else, right?
Exactly, yeah. And they didn't go too far down the character route and the history of the people route, which I was pleased about. There was bits here and there, and they focused a lot on Freddie Mercury, obviously, and what it meant for him to be gay and stuff like that, which was relatively delicately handled while still showing off the fact that he was an incredibly flamboyant individual.
Right.
Because it's a very difficult thing with Freddie Mercury to go down to, you know, because he lived this very elaborate, like over-the-top lifestyle. But also he was a human being, and it's always going to be hard to show that without losing too much to one side or the other. But I think they did a good job of it.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. I do intend to see it at some point. I do think it looks good and interesting, and possibly more interesting than a film about Queen that I would have thought it would be, actually.
Yeah, it was very good.
It looks well done.
Yeah, I liked it. And the other thing I saw was the Suspiria remake, which I was very, very excited about and did not enjoy.
Would you say it is a shit piece?
No, because a shit piece implies that it's going to be fun to watch.
Okay, right.
What they did was, Suspiria is a very interesting film, the original. A very artistic, very colourful, stylish horror movie. With a plot that's not entirely laid out for you, but is very easy to follow. What they've done with the remake is almost make it into an art house film and give it these incredibly heavy overtones of Cold War Berlin and this sort of story of guilt over the atrocities that happened during World War II. Okay. But at the same time, including a plot about a coven of witches, which is what the original movie's about, but changing that plot about a coven of witches to give it a new spin. So there's all sorts of things going on. Because it's an art house film, everything is unbelievably slow. So it's 2.5 hours of slow, not very scary horror movie with all of this extra dramatic and thematic stuff thrown in. And to be honest, it's a bit of a mess. And I was very disappointed.
Oh, that sounds rubbish.
There was maybe 2 scenes in it which were very effective from a horror perspective. And if you're making a horror movie, you've got to make a movie that's tense. And it wasn't. There was 2 scenes in it which were any good.
Was it better or worse than Antichrist?
It was better than Antichrist. I did not laugh as much at it as I did Antichrist, but I think that's a good thing when it's going for a very serious... There's this very, very horrible scene. And there's one thing that I really liked about Suspiria, which is the way that it... Because it's all about this dance school, which is run by a coven of witches. And that's not a spoiler. That's literally the main plot. And if you
don't
know that...
Which is a great concept.
And that's a really good concept. And what they do incredibly well in the remake is they tie the idea of interpretive dance and witchcraft together. And there's all of these scenes where the two are entwined. And when that happens, it works incredibly well. And it's very intense to watch. And it's quite creepy and horrible. And that's where the two scenes in the movie that really work are great. But unfortunately, the rest of the time, it's a real letdown. And I was very disappointed in it, unfortunately. And it's not as though I love the original movie. I know it's seen as this horror masterpiece, and I really like it, but I don't hold it up there as one of my favourite films ever. So it's not as though it's like nostalgia glasses talking or loyalty. It's just a disappointing film.
Oh, that's a shame. Does some of that burden have to fall on friend of the podcast, Dakota Johnson?
No. She up until right at the end of the movie, where there's this sudden twist ending, she actually fits the part really well, because she's this quite anxious sort of new member of the dance school who doesn't quite know where she stands. And so that kind of nervous energy actually suits the character very well, and she puts in a good performance.
Interesting.
Everyone puts in a good performance. It's just the concept of it is what lets it down.
Interesting. Because I heard her talking about it on the Kermode and Mayo, and she was interviewed by Simon Mayo, and she was quite flat when being asked about it. She sounded bored.
Oh, okay. I suppose that's just kind of how she comes across, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. But, you know, good luck to her. So, yeah, you went to the cinema. I haven't been to the cinema in ages. So that's it for kind of recent film chat, really. I still haven't even seen A Star Is Born.
I don't want to see that. I mean, we can watch it later, but...
We should watch it later. You don't want to see it? I think Bradley Cooper might actually be good. I can't work it out, but his interview on that podcast was very, very good, and he came across as really passionate and really intelligent and really philosophical in kind of a nun dickhead way, where it was just on the line where he might have been talking complete pretentious nonsense, but I think he got away with it.
Isn't it just an Americanized version of that Glenn Hansard movie, though? Let's be honest here.
Yeah, of course it is. That's the whole point.
So why not just watch... I can't remember the name of it, but you know the one I mean.
A Star is Born.
An Irish Star is Born.
P.S. I Love You.
What's it called? That's going to bug me. What's the name of that movie?
I genuinely have no idea what film you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking about, dude.
Glenn Hansard. Once. Yeah, I have never seen Once, and I've heard good things. And
yeah, that's great.
I would like to see it.
Yeah, that's a really good film. And when I saw everything about A Star is Born, I just thought, that's just Once, right? Apart from it's a remake of
an older film. It's a film that's been remade like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, but they've just given it Once, haven't they? Well, you don't know what I'm talking about because you've not seen it.
No, but... I've not seen it. Hey, if they make a sequel to Once, is it going to be called Twice?
The third one's Three Times.
Three Times a Lady. Yeah. Why didn't Lionel Richie do that? Why didn't he make 3 films and call them that? Because it's basically just the story, the weird, creepy story that's being told in the video for Hello. You've seen that video, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Where, like, he's the blind guy and he's sculpting a woman's face. It's really weird.
Is it that she's
blind and she's sculpting his face? I can't remember, but it's really strange.
It is an odd one.
Weirdly, it used to be on MTV2 occasionally back in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, I remember seeing it on there.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we talk about Groundhog Day?
We could do, but I have been stuck in a loop talking about this movie day after day after day.
Have you? Yeah, well, funny you should say that, because so have I. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say about it, really. I don't know how to break this spell, other than to obviously make a woman fall in love with me and climb into bed with me, which is the answer to all problems, right?
that is the solution to everything. Yeah. Trick a woman into loving you.
Yeah, pretty much that. And spend a lot of time learning obscure skills so that you can make a lot of things all happen in one day.
Yes.
That's how it works. That's what the book One Day is about as well. It's about a guy tricking a woman into loving him.
Yes, exactly. When it comes down to it, love is just about trickery.
It is. It's the most elaborate act of trickery that one can perform on another person.
We are all just performing birds, ruffling our feathers.
Yeah. You know, Shakespeare understood that. What he was on about, all the world's a stage and all that shit. To be or not to be? Well, to be, obviously, because you have to be an actor when you're in love.
To be or not to wasp? That is the question.
To be movie. Did you know that the B movie, Jerry Seinfeld, was originally supposed to be a live action film, but where he would play the kind of animated bee imposed into it?
I don't believe you. That can't be true.
That was how he originally wanted it to be. But it was too hard.
That can't be true. You're messing with me.
No, it's true. It's true. Which is not as good as Groundhog Day. I can say that with confidence, even though I have never even seen it.
See, I've not seen B-Movie, and I know that the internet's got this fascination with B-Movie. They love it. They're all over it. And I'm like, why? What is it about this movie that's so special?
Seinfeld is a talking bee. Duh. Yeah, I can't remember where I heard that, but it's definitely 100% true.
Right, okay.
So yeah, as we've been having this, we've been reliving this day over and over again, we should probably just talk about B-Movie.
If I'd known, this is the first time that it's come up in our however many repeats of this, I would have watched it in a previous day.
This is true. If you, if you had just infinite days, you would just end up seeing every film ever, wouldn't you? That'd be quite good.
Yes, yeah.
But you'd never get to see the films that were made in the future, which would be a shame.
That's true. It's true.
But yeah, that's what is the thing that is good about Groundhog Day, isn't it? That whole kind of, what would you do? And he goes through the various stages of what you would do as a person, almost as if working his way through the 5 stages of grief.
Yeah, it's I think the way that they frame it is quite clever. And what I really like about this movie, and something that I appreciated at the time, but I was worried about going back to see, was that obviously Bill Murray is a jerk in this movie, as he often is in movies.
That's his thing. He's a quirky jerk.
Yes. And in Groundhog Day, he starts off as a particularly loathsome one.
He's a lovable, quirky jerk.
But at the beginning, he's not lovable. He's just a jerk.
Yeah.
And I was worried about how that would come across and whether they could truly make him seem like a redeemable character by the end.
Yeah.
And I think they do. I think he does sort of redeem himself. And I think they do a good job of... It's almost like, obviously, he was in Scrooged, the sort of modernization of A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
But this feels almost more like that, where this curse that's been put upon him is there to actually change his perception of life in general. And over time, he does sort of develop that, and you get this understanding that he has changed very much as a person, and that he's not just trying to get out of the day, but he's doing it as a kind of way to improve himself.
Yeah, it's kind of the same basic premise as A Christmas Carol, isn't it? That someone who is a knob needs to be shown the value of helping people so that they can change for the better. It's a story as old as time, really, but I think it's explored in a very, very interesting and relevant way. And even today, especially, I mean, we're living in an age of really extreme selfishness, aren't we? And so it's a film that I think is actually still very relevant today, and it felt fresh, even though it also felt kind of very, very early 90s at the same time, with its title sequence and stuff, like comedy pop music over the simple title. I like that.
Yeah, it does feel ridiculously of its time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's enjoyable. It's nice that it feels that way.
Yeah, definitely. I did really enjoy watching it, and I felt like it had been so long that I hadn't seen it that it was basically like watching it anew. I couldn't really even remember anything that happened, so that was good. I still was kind of taken in and didn't know where it was going, and I loved it as a story and as a concept and the way that it explored the concept, but I'm not sure I fully invested in or believed in the romance, and that's the only bit where it kind of fell down for me. But I didn't find that problematic at all because I enjoyed it so much conceptually, but that still kind of, yeah, I just felt that the romance was the slightly flatter off element that felt more tacked on than the rest of it to me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that the romance between the two of them feels that sort of workable, and I think that's partly down to the way that they framed Andie MacDowell's character in the first place as well. So she plays Rita, who's like the producer to Bill Murray, who is the sort of talent weatherman guy, yeah. The diva,
perennially old man who here is probably like our age but looks 50.
Yeah. and so
no offense to Bill Murray, because like he looks like a distinguished gentleman. He's a handsome man, but even since he was in his early 20s, he has looked like a man in his 50s.
Yes, yeah, I think that's fair to say. And they do a very good job of establishing that all of the tricks that he uses to try and seduce people don't work on her. And that there's something more about her than the women that he normally goes for, I suppose, is the way to frame it. And that she's looking for something else other than just a celebrity shag.
Yeah.
And which, you know, is fair enough. You know, there's nothing wrong with a celebrity shag.
No, not at all. Especially when it's your local weather guy.
Exactly. Who wants more than the weather person?
See, that's the thing.
It's the ultimate.
Living on such a small island as ours, we don't really have localized weather and localized news. And it's a phenomenon that actually crops up a lot in American sitcoms and like rom-coms, isn't it, as well, eventually obviously immortalized in Anchorman. But yeah, that as a concept is something that I think always fascinates me, because we get weather, but it's always just one person sternly telling you that there's a cold front coming in from London.
I don't know about that. I suppose it depends on how much you watch the local news.
I don't watch the local news.
Well, there we go. Whereas we do have local news. Every area of the country has its own special BBC local news area.
Yeah, but that, but it's always
outside of the UK.
Seagull attacks man on beach, or plastic bag falls on man's head, or, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. Or
much like Anchorman.
Yeah, or gunman to judge suck your mum, rude boy, which was headline in the Croydon, the Croydon, whatever it's called, a few years ago. I'll dig that one out.
And but yeah, so we do have that going on, and I think there is this sort of mini celebrity about them when they sort of turn up in place, and there's like, oh, it's so and so from BBC Southeast and things like that. It does happen.
Oh, if you're in the BBC machine, I think there is a whole different thing.
So I think there is that in this country. And I think those people are those kind of minor celebrities in a very sort of day-to-day mediocre way, where, like you said, it's the most inane of news. And I quite like it. I'm not going to lie. I quite like when you're sick of fucking Donald Trump and Brexit and whatever neo-Nazis are doing in other parts of the world, putting on BBC Southeast Today to find out about what's going on in Gillingham. There's something quite nice about that.
Someone's grown a fucking massive marrow in Gillingham, mate.
Yeah, exactly. There's something really nice about that. And now let's go to Carol with the weather. Carol, hi. It's going to rain again because it's England. Here's what it's going to do in bumfuck village in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Thanks, Carol. I really like that. I like that so much more at the moment than watching the actual news and seeing all the horrible stuff that's going on through the lens of only having half an hour to do it. So all you get is the awfulness. None of the context.
This is true. I just want Carol to tell us that the cows are sitting down and that means it's going to rain, right?
Yeah, and you get that glorious bit in local news when it snows, where it's, let's take a look at the photos of it snowing in your village. Oh, look, here it is in whatever village. Yeah. Oh, it's snowing. Oh, look, here's another village where it's snowing. Let's spend 5 minutes showing pictures of snow. I love it. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then there's inevitably like pictures of teenagers having hijinks and, yeah, drawing penises in the snow and stuff and throwing snowballs at the camera and, yeah.
Yeah, I'm fully on board with that. And I think that's part of why I love this movie, is that the whole of that Groundhog Day nonsense is exactly the kind of local community silliness and that kind of local tradition that really I enjoy and I really appreciate.
Yeah, it has to be localized because those are the things that make you feel like every day is the same day to day. And I've actually been feeling that a little bit this week just because work's really been dragging on and it's just been kind of bleh. And like, yeah, sometimes you do feel like just every day you're getting up to go to the same place to do the same shit. And that's localized to you. And yeah, that kind of throwing that onto a small town does that really, really well. But also, it's not just any day in a small town. It's like a particular day that is an exceptional day, but that then makes it all the more mundane because you have to keep experiencing it again. So that's clever as well. And how they manage to find this existing real festival and just like literally just throw the film on top of that was really good. It's an actual thing.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I think, I mean, it's the kind of thing that would only happen in Pennsylvania, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's where Gritty comes from.
And it's really sweet. And I really like it. And I think if I was in America, I would consider going to see this ridiculous festival. I love it so much.
Why not? Apparently it draws huge crowds now. And like, yeah, you can't get in any of the hotels and whatever. So there's, but the ground, if you Google how old is the groundhog Phil? It says, it is claimed that this one groundhog has lived to make weather prognostications since 1886, sustained by drinks of groundhog punch, or elixir of life administered at the annual groundhog picnic. In this respect, Punxsutawney Phil is unique. The lifespan of a groundhog in the wild is roughly 6 years. Like, and it's like the groundhog people take themselves really seriously and wear all these hats year round. They're almost like Freemasons, and it's really cool.
Oh, it's so awesome. I really love it.
It is bizarre, but great. Also, there are a lot of different names for groundhog. In the Midwest, they call them a root hog. And in Texas, in some areas of Texas, they call them a sod poodle. You ever heard that one?
Texas, get out.
One of the there's a minor league affiliate of the San Diego Padres who recently changed their name to the Amarillo Sod Poodles. And they're
that's rubbish.
Yeah, it's terrible. But look it up, and their logo is like a really angry looking groundhog in a hat. It's terrible.
I'm looking up the the various different names for a groundhog, and some of them are just Pokemon names. Right, okay, so we've got Wood Groundhog, yeah.
Yeah.
A Chuck.
Yeah. A woodchuck. Fair enough. How much wood would a woodchuck chuck? Would a woodchuck, yeah, that's a woodchuck is the same as a groundhog, right?
Yeah. Woodchuck. I'm not sure about that. I think that's the name of a Kirsten Dunst film that's not about groundhogs. Ground pig, fair enough. Whistle pig. Not too sure about that one.
Whistle pig. All one word.
Whistler, again, I don't know about that. Thickwood Badger is going to be my porn star name.
Oh, and I love it. What?
Thickwood Badger.
Is that two words or three?
That's two words. Thickwood Badger.
Hi, I'm Thickwood Badger.
Canada Marmot, again, fair enough, because it's a kind of marmot.
Yeah.
It's all good. Then we've got the weird ones. You've got Monax, definitely a Pokemon name.
Yep.
Moonak, definitely a Pokemon name. Weenusk.
A Weenusk. That sounds like something you give a baby to get it to go to sleep.
Red Monk, I think isn't that one of Batman's villains, the Red Monk? And among French Canadians in Eastern Canada, Syphilux.
Syphilux.
Or maybe Syphilu.
Syphilu. A groundhog that has a genital disease. lovely how sort of localized all of those things are, and how that says so much about the kind of particular places where it's kind of just weird and stupid things, but that if you get to experience them over and over again become familiar and nice to you, and then you sort of come out the other side and you go on a journey with them, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. There's something special about that kind of thing. And yeah, so I'm all on board with Groundhog Day as a celebration.
Yeah, me too. Especially as the little bit in the town where the groundhog lives is called Gobbler's Knob. And like the film presents that in a way where like it's not playing it for laughs, but it wants you to laugh at it. You know, it's kind of striking that balance.
Yeah, it's playing up to the silliness of it all without pointing and laughing at it directly, which is the good way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, did we agree that after watching Four Weddings and a Funeral that Andy McDowell's performance in that film was not good?
Yes, yeah. It's fine, and it's fine based on the terrible like script that she had for that movie, but it wasn't anything spectacular.
Yeah. That's fair. So I was hoping she'd kind of redeem herself in this. And I think she was better in this than she was in that. But her performance still didn't grab me as much, I thought.
See, I like her in this.
But it's because of the way it's been set up. The focus isn't on her. Her character isn't given time to develop because her character is only there to provide the redemption for Bill Murray's character.
Yeah, I think there's this mirror, isn't there, where she is everything that he needs to become. He needs to get that energy back, that love for life. And so that's what she represents in the movie, is very much this kind of excitement, purity of like energy, I suppose is the best way to put it, where she's not supposed to be seen as this incredibly pure human being in a creepy way, but there's this lack of cynicism that she represents. And I think she does a really good job of providing that energy and providing that juxtaposition. I like her performance. But yeah, there is only one nuanced character in this movie, and it is Bill Murray's Phil.
Yeah, he gets all the good lines. Stuff like, Ned, I would love to stand here and talk to you all day, but I'm not going to.
Yes, that was very good.
And that's what the tone of the movie is like most of the time, isn't it?
Yeah. it's the entire thing is that. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And yeah, when he knows he's going to live it over again, he starts having kind of low-key anarchical fun, and then it starts to like gets ridiculous, like stealing cars and stealing the groundhog and stuff. That's all very, very enjoyable. I love how he's like holding the groundhog in the car, and he just crashes the car into the pit. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, that scene made me laugh an awful lot. Just the sight of Bill Murray with a groundhog. There was just something great about that.
Yeah, and I love when he's got all the like huge plates of pancakes and donuts, because that's what I'd do. I would just stuff myself. If I knew, because I assume you wake up, like, this is the thing that it didn't address, is he aging?
He's not aging, no. I think it's established that he's been there for years and years and years.
Right, okay. So the time period of it was obviously over a few years. Where did it establish that? Maybe I missed that.
I don't know if it's really established, but that's kind of like the impression you get based on how he sort of talks about things and stuff like that. So let's have a little look.
So
Harold Ramis says that he probably lived the same day for about a decade.
Right, okay, that's interesting, because it felt to me like years, definitely, but maybe not that long. But yeah, a lot of time passes when he's like becoming really good at the piano and stuff, which is also I think what I would do. I would use that time to get really, really good at something. But again, yeah, if you were aging, it would be kind of a sad situation, so it's good that he's not, I guess, because if you were aging and people weren't, you'd wake up one day and everyone would be like, oh, what the hell happened to you? So I guess that would be kind of a logic loophole. Oh, suddenly you're bald now.
Yes, yeah. And I think it was important for them to do that, wasn't it? And yeah, I think one of the good fun things about this movie is that you do get onto thinking, like, what would you do if you're in the same situation?
Yeah. And you're like, of course he uses it to get laid, which is, yeah, obviously, like, a little bit skeezy, but he redeems.
But that's
his
character,
himself.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of establishes what kind of character he is at the beginning of the movie, where he's just interested in the material and interested in the physical, rather than on engaging with the world around him and understanding the world around him.
Yeah, and it takes a turn when he realizes that he can't save the life of this homeless man, which is a really, I think, quite a good device, which could have been seen as a very, very shoehorned in, you know, quite cheap ploy, but I think it really works.
Yeah, they handle that very sensitively, and they deal with it in a way that doesn't sort of lead to an sort of deliberate tearjerker moment as well.
Yeah.
So it walks that line very well, and it really does make you understand that there has been this shift in his character too.
Yeah, I think it does that really well, and that means it's very, very well paced as well. Because it's a good length, it finishes as soon as it needs to, as soon as it's done what it needs to do. But a lot of it does seem like sort of comic set pieces strung together, but it still works.
Yeah, yeah, it works incredibly well.
Yeah. And there's no attempt to kind of explain the logic of why or how it's happening. And once he realizes that it's happening, it's just straight in. That's fine. He doesn't like wake up and go, oh, I'm fat now. Or like, you know.
It's a callback to another movie.
It doesn't spend like literally 15 minutes of him walking around going, duh, what day is it? Oh, where's my blueberry Red Bull? It doesn't do that.
I'm fat now.
Yeah. So yeah, it gets right what was that film called? When We Used to Be Young People?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It gets right what that film got wrong about the logic of time travel and repetition.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it's also funny how like he can't kill himself, so therefore suicide is treated as a comic device, but it's so absurd that it doesn't feel like it's treating it lightly, almost. It's like it's so absurd as to be completely inconsequential, almost.
Yeah, they handle it in a very good way. Where like you said, it's dealt with as this absurd thing in a way that doesn't feel like it's treating the subject matter callously, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's a good one.
And I really like the Weatherman song that bookends it. I don't know who it's by. It's kind of a cheesy like song going like, he's a weatherman. It's great. Love that.
Yeah, I really like the music in this film in general. It has that kind of silly comedy charm to it that only you get in comedy movies of this era.
Yeah, yeah. So where they actually sort of made the music really, really work and flow with the film, I think. It was almost like Beethoven. Not that I have to bring everything back to Beethoven, but I do. But if you look at the music in Beethoven, it works in kind of a similar way.
For a moment there, I did think that you were talking about Beethoven, the composer.
Well, that would have been appropriate. But it's Mozart that he wants to learn in the film, not Beethoven. But
And then did twig that you were talking about the dog movie.
Yeah, which is an amazing movie from a similar time period. But I think a similar sensibility to it. I think genuinely a reason why I like a lot of films from around this time is because I loved and still love Beethoven so much that was a real gateway into 90s filmmaking for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. It's from a nostalgic point of view. We should watch Beethoven at some point. Or maybe Beethoven's second, because there's a love story between two dogs in that film.
Maybe we should double bill it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, it would be appropriate because they shot both of them back to back. So they, like, as soon as they finished shooting the first one, they immediately shot the second one with the same cast. So it's all the same cast members and it flows quite neatly.
That's how you know that you've got a good movie, is when they do that.
Yeah.
Like the Alan Quatermain King Solomon's Mines movies that were made in the 90s or maybe late 80s as a way to capitalize on the success of Indiana Jones, which are two of my favorite terrible B movies.
Yeah.
They're great fun. Yeah, so I'm pleased to know that Beethoven did the same thing.
Yeah, and it also stars Charles Grodin, who kind of similarly to Bill Murray is a man who always looked middle-aged, even when he was really, really young. Although now he's still around and he's like 85 or something. Yeah, 83. And he looks old now that he's 83, but he always looked about 45, Charles Grodin. He was the perfect on-screen dad.
Yeah, he was. He's really, from what I remember, I used to watch Beethoven all the time when I was a kid. And from what I remember, he's really good in that film as the exasperated father.
Yep. Exasperation. That's what it's all about.
Indeed.
And most importantly, it's the same dog from film one to film two. Whereas in Beethoven's third, different dog.
Couldn't live up to it. It's like when they replaced RoboCop.
Yeah, with a different cop.
A different cop.
And then, yeah, and that by the time you get to RoboCop and me, it's like 15 different cops. Because they got to get him through his whole timeline. You know?
Exactly, exactly.
And then, yeah, I did still cry at the end, though, when they buried RoboCop in the garden.
Just one mechanical leg sticking out of the dirt.
Oh. Good times.
Spoiler alerts for Marley and Me, by the way.
Oh yeah, sorry if you couldn't guess.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie, but I knew that obviously it's about the life of a dog. Dogs don't live as long as humans.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? But yeah, so going back to the movie that we're supposed to be talking about, Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. what else is there to say about this movie?
There's not that much to say about it, is there? It's really it doesn't necessarily have like a huge amount of depth and intrigue or lots of stuff for us to dwell on, really, does it? It's just a great film that kind of is funny and washes over you, and it does make you consider, you know, what would you do if you could have all this time over, but it's done in such a light-handed way as to not make you really want to dwell on it, which is good, I guess.
Yeah, I think it does things really well in that regard. And so what would you do if you were what would be your sort of immediate things you'd want to do if you were living the same day over and over?
I'd definitely like learn how to do stuff, you know, stuff I wanted to do that takes time and like really skilled stuff, like learn how to properly make nice art and design stuff on like go deep on like all of the tech programs that I do and learn how to code and stuff like that, you know. So I just had a lot of really, really deep skills, learn languages and stuff. But I guess if there was no guarantee that I was going to come out the other side eventually, then you'd kind of feel like there wasn't any point. In which case, because, well, actually where I was going with this originally before we discussed whether he was aging or not, was that if I knew that I was going to wake up kind of with the exact same body the next day, I would eat so much pizza and so many donuts and so much ice cream. I'd literally go to Tesco's, like, give them a credit card, buy all the ice cream and just take it out in a trolley and just probably just sit there in the car park just eating it all.
That's a beautiful image.
Because I'm a fat man, all right?
Looking really sad. Just, and I like to imagine you haven't bought a spoon with it.
No, I wouldn't be sad.
So you're just shoveling it into your face.
No, I'd have bought a spoon in Tesco. Like one of the nice big serving spoons from the upstairs like homeware section. I'd have bought one of those. No, and I wouldn't be sad. I would be happy. That's the thing. I would be I would be raucous with glee.
Surely eventually the realization that this might be your life forever would set in, and there would be days where you'd be sad eating ice cream.
Yeah, no, I think you couldn't do that every day, but I'd do that maybe once every 4 or 5 days, or I'd work my way through all the food groups.
Pizza, ice cream, chips.
Yeah, pizza, ice cream, chips, and fried chicken.
Oh, mate. I mean, that's what dreams are made of, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I dream about. Wait, what would you do?
I don't know. I mean, I think something that wasn't really established in this film was how far can you get in one day to visit somewhere? You can get to a lot of places in a day.
Yeah, because as well, they've got that thing with the snowstorm coming in, so he can't really leave the town, which is very good for constraining the logic of the film, isn't it? But yeah, if we had just a regular old day, you could get... Yeah, it depends. Yeah, if you rush straight down to the airport, you can get to first flight. I could reasonably get to a Major League Baseball game, assuming the season was on.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all sorts of things that you could do. So I'd definitely travel a little bit. I'd go to different cities that I could reach.
I'd go to Parliament and fuck shit up. Not in a terrorist way. Just in a like disrupting things you're
messing up Jacob Rees-Mogg's papers.
Yeah, you break into his office and just like throw the papers on the floor and run away. Or you sneak in a trumpet and then you go into like the public gallery where the public can go in when they're having all the debates. You sneak in a trumpet and then you just start playing it really badly and really loudly in the middle of a really important Brexit debate.
Thus adding a lot to the discussion as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that would not lower the tone of where politics is right now.
Yeah, I definitely do some fun stuff like that as well.
Yeah, pranks. I would do pranks, wouldn't you?
I would play a lot of video games.
Yeah, that's true.
As well.
Oh God, imagine though, like the horrible purgatory of getting to a certain point in one game and then saving it and then realizing you can't pick up from that save the next day.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't play anything that takes more than, like, however many hours to complete.
Yeah.
You'd have to play short games.
I couldn't get through all the Zeldas.
No.
Which is a shame. Could probably do Link to the Past.
Yeah, I mean, what you could do is you could look up different speed runs of games and see where all the glitches are, and then you could glitch your way through.
Yep. You get the Game Genie out.
Get the Game Genie. Get your Action Replay.
Yeah, he's swimming in the Thames. There's all sorts of things you could do. Yeah, you know, all the little things are sometimes like you. Every time I walk across like Waterloo Bridge in the morning, I just want to throw my phone in the River Thames, and like I actually could if I knew I was going to get it back the next day.
Yeah, yeah. There's all sorts of stuff you can do.
It's that kind of giving in to all of those impulses, isn't it? But yeah, I appreciate exactly. The way that the Groundhog Day was directed, that it turned that into something that was funny and lighthearted and not something weird.
Can you imagine Quentin Tarantino's Groundhog Day?
Tarantino's Groundhog Day. It would be a bloodbath.
Oh, you murder people because life is dark and human impulses are dark. Yeah.
But there'd be a lot of speeches.
Because, yeah.
You'd be like, I shot you because I'm living this day over and over again. And it is sad, man.
That is a terrible impression of what goes on in a Quentin Tarantino movie, might I add.
That is exactly what goes on in every Tarantino
movie. You were so close. You were so close until you started quoting what you think the Tarantino movie would be.
His stuff is more quotable, and I don't have the gift for that, to be fair.
Instead of, it's sad.
It's sad, man. I was thinking more like Lars von Trier's Groundhog Day.
Yeah, if in Lars von Trier's Groundhog Day, he would literally walk up to someone and say, "I am replaying this day. I am sad. I'm going to shoot you now."
And then like a whole bunch of groundhogs, like rabid, horrible groundhogs, would come out of the ground and just start eating everyone.
Yeah, yeah, that would be that is Lars von Trier's Groundhog Day.
It'd be called Day of the Groundhog. And it'd be 4 hours long. Mostly just shots of like Shia LaBeouf getting eaten by groundhogs.
It would cut between that and then you sitting there eating ice cream.
Yeah, in the car park, in the Tesco car park, while the groundhogs are just slowly creeping into the car park from all sides.
I mean, I'd watch that movie, not going to lie.
Yeah, that'd be good. And Elon Musk could appear in it somehow.
Elon Musk is a very good name for a groundhog.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Like, Musk makes me think of groundhogs.
Like
is
muskrat.
That, like, yeah, what is a muskrat the same as a groundhog?
American listeners, what's the difference between a muskrat and a groundhog? Over here we have
muskrat.
I mean, if you tell us about this, we will explain to you the difference between voles and mice and rats and moles
and stoats
and the various other things.
And weasels.
So there is a website called crittercontrol.com with a page titled "What are the differences between woodchucks and muskrats?"
Okay. Oh yeah, I'm on that same one. It's got muskrats. What does a muskrat look like? Animals in chimney. Animals in crawl spaces. So this is another thing we don't have in the UK is crawl spaces. You know, this is like an American concept where they're like at the bottom of their house or whatever, they just have like a bit of dead space in the house where the only purpose of which, as far as I can tell, is for rodents to crawl into and die and then stink out your house. But
there is another reason for it, Paddy.
What?
What's that? It's so that people can live in the walls of your house and then come in and get you in the middle of the night.
That's oh yeah, yeah. Well, that doesn't happen here.
No, we don't have that.
No. We're more often brought down by our own hubris than we are by other people. That's the British way.
So muskrats do look a bit different to groundhogs.
Yeah, they've got these kind of like whiskery cheeks, as far as I can tell. But yeah, Elon Musk is definitely a groundhog.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got beavers. He's
definitely. You got beavers.
Yeah. Oh, whistle pig.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so Groundhog Day is directed by Harold Ramis, which is a name I know.
Sorry, I got distracted there because I found something horrible. I will go back to Harold
Ramis. Is there someone living in the walls of your house?
I wish. That would be great.
Harold
Ramis did. He was one of the Ghostbusters.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Did Caddyshack as well,
which also stars Bill Murray.
Yes. He wrote a lot of those kind of movies. So he wrote Animal House.
Oh man, I love
Animal
House.
Stripes as well. Wrote Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, I think.
Yeah. Good man.
He's written all sorts over the years and directed a fair few as well. So Harold Ramis was phenomenal, really, really talented comedian, really knew what was up.
So he's been behind all of this stuff. I just never quite made the connection.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the thing that distracted me was a website called practicalselfreliance.com, which has a post called Buttermilk Fried Woodchuck.
What? Hell no. I am not here for this.
And there's a picture.
Oh, good. Just what I always wanted to see.
In fact, there's pictures of
meat.
The woodchuck before being battered, as it's being battered, and then once it's been fried. I'm not really sure that this is a good idea, people.
No, do not fry groundhogs.
I think it's by some kind of weird survivalist.
Okay.
I'll send you a link, Paddy. You can put it in the show notes in case anyone's interested.
This is the kind of content that we need to give people. Give the people what they want.
They do refer to groundhogs as basically just big wild rabbits. I'm not sure how true that is.
They are not remotely like rabbits.
No. But now I know that people eat groundhogs, and that's not something I necessarily needed to know. Thank you, internet.
I thought you were just going to stop at they refer to groundhogs as basic. You know, like how you call someone a basic biatch.
Groundhogs, the definition of basic bitch.
Yeah, groundhogs are well basic. There are no sea otters, that's for sure.
That's true.
Oh, I'm on the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club Groundhog Day website, and the pictures are all really low res.
There's something about that that makes me really happy.
It's groundhog.org, established 1887. How hard do you think it would be for us to infiltrate the Groundhog Club?
I think we could do it. I think it would take some work.
It seems like it's mostly about hats.
Yeah, and we both got relatively decent hat game.
Yeah. I'd say we've got good hat game, both of us. I wore my woolly hat today for the first time.
Yeah, I got my woolly hat out as well. It felt amazing.
Yep, it was nice. Well, we're going to do it. We're going to infiltrate the Groundhog Club and find out all the secret information about Phil the Groundhog, because that's what the people want.
Do you reckon it's like Scientology?
Yeah, I think I think it's worse than Scientology.
One day the souls of groundhogs were frozen and dropped into volcanoes around the world.
Yeah, they came from space.
The bad spirits are why people get depression.
Yeah, the groundhogs are causing anxiety.
Because I've told you that's what Scientologists believe.
Yeah, yeah.
It's alien souls that were frozen, were then dropped into volcanoes, and then the alien souls infect us with bad thoughts.
Literal bad juju.
Yeah, exactly. So ooh. Going back to Groundhog Day, have you got anything else you'd like to add before I get onto the trivia?
Just that you can't stop death.
No. That's a really depressing.
That's all note. I wanted to say.
You can't stop death.
That's kind of the message of it as well. But no, it's good. It's good. Hit me with the trivia.
So Bill Murray was bitten by the groundhog twice during shooting. He even had to have anti-rabies vaccinations because the bites were so severe.
Oh no. Was this when he was driving in the car?
I imagine so, yeah.
Yeah, so was it, did they use the actual Pennsylvania Punxsutawney groundhog?
No, I think they raised a family of groundhogs to be in the movie in different parts here and there.
That's kind of a long game, because like, how long do you need to raise a groundhog for before it's film ready?
I know. I mean, you've got to send it to groundhog acting school.
Yeah, got to get its groundhog degree.
Yeah.
Hold up. The Groundhog site has a page called Groundhog Club Recipe Book.
Oh my God. Is it called Groundhog Recipes?
Yeah, groundhoggers. It's here. One of the most frequent questions we get asked is, what is the traditional Groundhog Day meal? We, of course, include the traditional groundhog cookie made from molasses as an important treat for Phil's day. Groundhog cookie. It seems to be mostly about the groundhog cookie, and it's $10 for an actual book, Cooking with Punxsutawney Phil.
Oh, I love it. I'm looking at the website now.
Yeah. Oh, no, wait. There's multiple groundhog cookbooks, apparently. The traditional groundhog recipe started many years ago with Elaine Light, the past president of the Inner Circle. She was also the author of many different cookbooks, which include Gourmets and Groundhogs, The Second Helping, and Cooking with the Groundhog, all of which sound like discarded episodes of Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives.
Oh.
I'm going to get you this book for Christmas.
Mate, please do. I love it. I love it so much.
It's in my shopping bag right now. $18. Wait, it says choose delivery method, free shipping, $8. This is the worst website ever. And I love it.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. I'm glad for... this is like Groundhog Day. The concept could have been done. in any way, that they're like living the same day over and over, and it would have been good. But to attach itself to such an interesting and such a weird real festival is just a masterstroke. I think that's the thing that really made it such a unique and interesting movie, and that's the thing I think that has given it its cult status, just centering around the weirdness of life in that way. Don't you think?
Yes, yeah. There's this quaintness to it that I think it manages to perfectly capture what small town nostalgia and what small town tradition is really like, and how that taps into the root of how people interact in a really unique way. Which I agree. I think that's part of the charm of this movie, definitely.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the Groundhog Cookies recipe, and it includes currants or raisins, so I'm out.
Oh, mate, get out. Replace those with chocolate chips, surely.
Yeah, you could do that. As long as you've got the molasses in there, you're fine. I'm still not really sure what molasses are.
It's like a treacle, isn't it, molasses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds like something that would be part of an old man's skincare routine. So, like mothballs and that kind of thing. Yeah, got to get my molasses on. Got to use a flannel on me face.
Yeah, it's a kind of it's like a kind of treacle, I think, molasses.
Yeah, I'm gonna do I want to Google molasses right now? Hi, I'm Molasses. Welcome to my cooking show.
But there was a molasses flood in Boston.
Oh shit!
Which killed, I think, about 20 people. There was this storage tank for molasses which broke, and it went flooding through the streets of Boston and killed about 20 people.
Shit. Imagine that. You're killed by molasses.
Back in the early 1900s.
Blimey. Apparently, according to this, molasses and treacle are the same thing.
Oh, well, there we go.
Well, there you go. I did not know that, and I bake. But it's never come up in my baking. Until I got to Groundhog Cookies.
So thank you, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Thank you, Vexatorny Phil. You've taught us a vital lesson.
Groundhog Day is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it's glorious. It teaches us more than one day's worth of stuff.
Yeah, you can learn something new every day, which is good if you're repeating the same day over and over, because you don't have to keep learning the same thing over and over.
Yes, yeah. So in terms of other trivia, there was originally going to be a scene where Phil tried to kill Groundhog Phil within his little home.
Oh, no.
But that was, they decided it was too much like Caddyshack, so they didn't.
Does he kill a groundhog in Caddyshack? I've never seen
it. Is it a groundhog? I don't think it's a groundhog in Caddyshack, but yeah. I think it's been a few years since I saw it, but I think he blows up some kind of rodent with a stick of dynamite, doesn't he?
Of course he does.
It's a gopher, I think.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, where does a gopher factor into all of this? Gordon the gopher?
Of course, gophers do not look like Gordon the gopher.
No.
Americans, you don't know what Gordon the gopher is either, do you? It was
a I'm going to answer British on behalf thing. Of our American listeners and say no.
Because it was just a thing on British Saturday TV, wasn't it?
Yeah. Apparently gophers are also known as pocket gophers. These are just Pokemon, I'm sorry.
Pocket gophers, gotta catch them all. God, Gordon the gopher is horrifying. I've not looked at Gordon the gopher since I was about 7 years old.
He does not even look like a rodent.
He doesn't. He looks like some kind of discount Muppet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's and definitely like a Jim Henson cast off.
It's fucking horrible.
Philip Schofield found him in the bins behind the Jim Henson studio and was like, "You're my new best friend."
It will have telepathically told him that he's the new best friend, because that is the kind of thing that is definitely haunted by a poltergeist. Look at it, fucking hell.
You know, it looks like the Sugar Puffs beast.
Yeah, it's like someone sort of It's like someone tried to grow the honey monster in a vat and something went wrong.
The honey monster. That's what the
cloning process didn't quite go right, and so this is like an early prototype that went wrong. But it escaped from the vat before they could kill it.
like one of Brundle's experiments in The Fly.
That's exactly what it is. Jesus Christ, it's horrible.
Just that, you know, you just let me get away with calling the honey monster the sugar puff beast.
I was going to let that slide. But since you have brought it up again, what, Paddy?
Yeah, you know.
Sugar Puff's beast.
I don't know why, that's really tickled me. I'm so terrible. I'm awful.
Oh my god, that's done it for me.
Here we go.
The other bit of I liked that Brian Doyle Murray's in this, who is Bill Murray's brother, I think.
His older half brother, I think.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's and I was watching it and I was thinking, where do I know him from? And it's because he plays Noah of Noah's Arcade fame from Wayne's World.
Yes,
the guy who buys out the show.
Yep. He's had loads of like really small roles in great things, hasn't he?
Yes, yeah.
And he's done a lot of writing as well.
Yeah, and yeah, so that was, it was nice to see him in this. It was good.
Yeah, that's good. In a lot of the pictures on Google research, he has a very good moustache.
He does have an excellent moustache. The other thing that I liked about this movie was that Michael Shannon's in it, and this was his first ever movie role.
Yeah, that's crazy. We obviously discussed this year as the scary, angry general man in The Shape of Water.
And yes, he turns up here as someone who's just got married.
Yeah, looking very young and blonde and with facial hair.
Yes,
it's kind of disconcerting.
Yeah, it's a bit. He looks a bit creepy, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, apart from that, apparently Tori Amos was considered for the role of Rita, which would have been interesting.
Oh, that would have been very interesting indeed. Yeah. Was anyone else considered for Bill Murray's role? Because I really couldn't see anyone else doing it. Even though obviously someone else could have done a great job, obviously. But he was. Yeah. It just seems such an iconic role for him.
Yeah, they apparently considered Tom Hanks, but decided he was too nice.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Bill
Murray would never appear in a Carly Rae Jepsen video.
No, exactly. But yeah, so I think that'll do it for trivia. I think that's a nice few tidbits.
Yeah, nice. Cool. So yeah, that's it. I was to say it's a great film. I enjoyed it very much. A lot of things to like about it. Always worth revisiting. Great fun.
Yes. Yeah. It's excellent. I enjoyed it a lot. So how are we going to rank this? I mean, the obvious one is how many years.
Well, we're going in years, are we?
We've got to go in years.
Yeah, because even up to 20 days wouldn't be enough, would it?
No.
I wouldn't even be able to get through all the different like ice cream flavors in that many. Yeah, that many days.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, within 20 years, I could. I'd have got through every pizza.
Every kind of pizza. Every kind of ice cream.
Yeah. I would wait for 16 years, I'd say. You know, 16 now, 20, it's an 8 out of 10. It's very, very good. I don't know that I necessarily like really feverishly love it enough to go above that, but yeah, it's good. It's very good. Lots to like. Perhaps, yeah, the romance feeling just slightly tacked on, maybe just docks 1 or 2 points. If the romance really, really completely nailed it, it might have gotten to a 17 or an 18. But yeah, it's a 16, I'd say.
Yeah, and for me, I'd go with a 15 for the same reasons as well. It's a very funny film. It's a very heartwarming film. Really well paced, really well written and directed, really good performances. But the romance aspect of it doesn't really hit home. And yeah, so I wouldn't say that I love it, but it is a very good movie and I enjoyed watching it again.
Yeah, that's good. And it is a lot better than when we first met, just as a point of comparison.
Yes, yeah, it is much better.
And how it deals with similar themes.
Yes, yeah, precisely.
Cool. Well, that was your choice, so it's my choice next. But next Friday is the 30th of November, so it's almost pushing into Christmas. Do you think we should start with the Christmas films already, or should we just make sure that it's only December? Would it be bad luck to do a Christmas film for the 30th? What do you reckon?
I think it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got to wait until until it is December before we kick on with those.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, in that case, shall we do the thing that you texted me about earlier? Just to have like a nice sort of palate cleanser before we delve into the festive madness.
Yeah, I'm totally down for that.
Yeah, so this means this will be the first time ever we'll be reviewing a video game.
We will be.
Which is, some of you may have heard of this game. It came out a few years ago and it ruffled a few feathers when it came out, should we say. it's called Hatterful Boyfriend. And as we're recording this, it's 99p on the iOS App Store. So I can play it on my phone on the tube and get strange looks. But I'm looking forward to it greatly. It seems like a lot of fun and definitely the kind of thing we should be reviewing just as a way to kind of branch out, you know?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I've not played it myself, but it looks like the kind of ridiculous fun that I can get on board with.
Yeah. So are we going to impose a sort of minimum playing time or something? Or is it just kind of see how far you get within the week?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should do a see how far you get.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
Can you complete it? Is it a game you complete or does it just go on forever?
I think you can, can't you?
Okay.
I think the idea is to... Well, I won't give away too much.
No. But let's see how it goes. So basically, if you know nothing about this, it's a pigeon dating simulator set in a school.
Yes. Yeah.
We've talked about some weird crap on this podcast, but that yeah, is...
I think this takes the biscuit, by far, the
weirdest thing that we've talked about, at least in this episode.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's going to be something special, shall we say.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll treat it as a special, a video game special.
Yeah, there we go.
Cool. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I am as well. I've had my eye on this one for a while in terms of weird crap. So let's bring it on.
Have you now? You pigeon fancier.
That's literally what I texted you calling you, Paddy.
Yeah.
I got there first.
Also, I've just realised that the honey monster looks a lot like Gritty. And I think maybe Gritty might be his child.
I think Gritty came from the same place as Gordon the Gopher. He was just an improved version.
the Sugar Puffs Desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. He crawled out from under the same rock.
Definitely.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, in that case, all that remains is for us to say thank you very much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you've learned some new groundhog facts and you've enjoyed that as much as we have. As always, leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. Always helps. Very much appreciated if you like what we do. And you can get in touch with us on email at bigboysdontcrypodcast@gmail.com, on the Twitters, bigboysdontpod. Always love hearing from you. You know, what are your groundhog cookies like? What would you do if you were living the same day over and over, you know?
Yes, yeah. What would you do? I want to know what you would do if you had the same day to live over and over again.
Yeah, always love to hear from you. So drop us a line. In the meantime, we'll be back next week to discuss the game Hatterful Boyfriend. Play along with us if you like.
Yes, yeah, do. It's only 99p, so get on board.
Get it on your phone.
Yes, do it.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.